Good morning. Welcome to the House Ways and Means Committee. I call this committee meeting to order and note for the record that a quorum is present. So our first order of business is the approval of the minutes from Monday, April 17th, 2023. Vice Chair Edelson, could I get a motion for approval of the minutes?
That's my motion, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So today our plan is, again, we have same time constraints we will have all week, which is the floor session. And so what we're going to do is we're going to do three bills, which will all be combined together, as we have done before, to merge the bills to match up with the Senate structure to go to conference committee. And so the first bill for today is House File 2755. Representative Nelson, and as you make your way down to the table, I will move that House File 2755 before the committee. And welcome, Representative Nelson. And I will also move the A12 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author desires. Any discussion to the A12 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A12 amendment is adopted. So to your bill, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 2785 is the labor and industry bill for this year, the funding bill. We had an $8 million overbase target, which we met. Funding the Department of Labor and Industry. Article 1 of the bill is the funding portion of it. Article 2 is the Ag and Food Processors Worker Protection Bill, which came from House File 70 from Representative Hansen. Article 3 is the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. Article 4 is the Refinery Safety Bill. Article 5 was upgrades to the Combative Sports Regulations and lowering some fees there for some of the people that participate in that. Article 6 is a bunch of miscellaneous provisions, and the first one splits the Department of Apprenticeship, or the Division of Apprenticeship, off from the Division of Labor Standards and creates its own separate Division of Apprenticeship. It also adds to labor ed and advancement grants. It adds tribal individual people and tribal governments to those who are eligible for these grants. It requires the DLI to recreate a poster for vets benefits and services that employers above a certain level can have to post. Brings our OSHA fines into compliance with federal standards. Ensuring we can maintain federal funding for MnOSHA. It creates an ergonomic standards board within the Department of Labor and Industry. And this is important because repetitive injuries are things that cause people to get injured and be off the job. This, if we can get to the figure out ways to prevent those preventive injuries through ergonomics, we have less workers getting injured. It lowers the cost of reinstatement for various licenses. It adds language to the residential construction licensing that allows solar contractors to be part of the residential construction, which allows consumers to have access to the contractor recovery fund when they end up having work done by a shoddy contractor. It adds language for electric vehicle charging stations for new residential multi-unit construction to the building codes. Instructs the commissioner to adopt rules for window cleaning safety and adult changing tables through the construction code process. And the window cleaning safety has been something that's been on our radar for a few years, about some concern about some buildings where that's required, they can never be used. And this has the Department of Labor and Industry look at those and come up with rules that make more sense for those people. Article 7 of the board funds the Public Employee Relations Board, which we've had on the books for a few years, that Representative Linda Carlson brought back into existence. But we've never funded it more than just having one person in the office. This allows funding for the board to get up and running, and so that they can deal with those issues with the public employees and public employers. Article 8 is the Meatpacker Safety Bill. And Article 9 is the warehouse worker safety bill. And with that, Madam Chair, that's the bill. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Discussion to House File 2755. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to be adopting the A12?
We did already.
Oh, we did?
Yes.
Oh.
You're welcome.
That was super fast.
I actually paused for a long time, and I looked over the outside of that aisle to check to make sure.
I apologize,
so, nope, that's
Chair.
Okay. So we have adopted the amendment. So if you want to speak to that portion, you know, now would be totally fine to do that.
Okay,
Scott.
Perfect. Yeah. I'm just wondering, Madam Chair, if the author could explain the A12. Just lots of numbers in there. Let's see.
Yeah.
Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair and members, the A12, I was ready to do that, but so quick that. Anyway, the A12 increases funding for OSHA in the division of, as a division of Department of Labor and Industry, to add more OSHA inspectors. And this is not coming out of a general fund. This is coming out of the, the workers' compensation fund. And I guess, again, we've heard in our committee a lot about there not being enough OSHA inspectors from the GOP side of the committee, concern about why isn't OSHA getting out there. This allows the Department of Labor and Industry to hire more OSHA inspectors so we can get out to work sites to make sure that they're safe for the workers.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just pivoting here a little bit, Article 5, the combative sports piece, Representative Nelson, was that heard in committee?
Representative Nelson.
It was heard, yes, it was heard in the committee as part of the original bill 2755, which was the governor's budget bill, and it was heard in that, and this is upgrading the rules and, again, lowering some of the fees for participants in combative sports.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if anyone else has questions about this bill, but if, I don't know. I'll just kind of give my summary here since I'm
Representative
acting.
Scott, and Representative Petersburg just raised his hand. I know you're kind of playing lead today a little bit, so I could come back to you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I noticed that you stopped the description of the bill at Article 9. You didn't comment on Article 10, which is the worker construction wage protections. And so I was inquiring if there are key areas in that particular section that are important as well.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was my mistake as I was going through it. Article 10 is the construction worker wage protection. It deals with some things we have passed in the past few years, wage protection and misclassification of workers' statutes. This is just closing a couple of loopholes that have come up, and it's important that we make sure that workers, as they work, that they're being properly classified and properly paid, and that they get paid the money that they were promised and that they're owed from their work that they have done.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And in that regards, I'm trying to remember, I've been reading a lot of bills lately. it seems to me that there's something in here in which we're getting a little pushback from contractors being required to be liable for pay for subcontractors and subcontractors. Is that in your bill as well?
Representative Nelson.
Yes, Madam Chair. That's part and parcel of the worker protection of Article 10.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And that has a little bit of a concern because when a subcontractor, it's like anybody else. You know, you hire somebody to do a job and you expect them to be held accountable for that. And you could do all the due diligence you want, and you could even pay them to do their job, and now we're going to be holding them liable if they choose to defraud others. Isn't that a little bit onerous for contractors to have to figure out the subcontractors, et cetera, all the way down to the bottom of the list?
Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair and members, this is part of making sure workers get paid properly. It is putting a little bit of onus on the general contractors to make sure that when they hire subcontractors, they know who they're hiring and they know that they're paying their people properly.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I'll leave it at that. But sometimes they may have confidence in the subcontractor, but they don't know that the subcontractor is subbing out from their work as well sometimes, and so it makes it difficult. And I agree. I mean, I think we need to have everybody be able to get paid. I'm just concerned about the onerousness of that particular provision. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair.
Further discussion to the bill? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, this bill is setting up I believe it's a nine-person nursing home workforce standards board with enormous rulemaking authority. And is there a provision in the bill that says whatever this board comes up with, that they have to report that back to the legislature, and the legislature has to approve or disapprove before any action is taken?
Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair, members, again, that came out of House File 908, which is Representative Abadjie's bill. I believe that the idea is to make sure that we have standards there, so that similar to what we did with nurses, keeping work in the nurses' safety bill we passed a few years ago, making sure that the workplace is safe for the nursing home workers, and bringing that stuff forward so that we can make sure that, again, people go home from work at the end of the day in the same condition they came to work.
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Representative Nelson, that wasn't my question. My question was, this board comes up with recommendations, and what authority do they have? Do they have more authority to implement those regulations than the legislature, or if they come up with a regulation, do they have to first pass it through us?
Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair and members, I believe they have to pass it through us.
Could you point?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you point to the page and line that expressly says that, Representative Nelson?
Representative Nelson. And
I'm gonna phone a friend here from the commissioner.
Commissioner. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I serve as the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. To Representative Scott's question, the board would be tasked with looking at and adopting rules that would relate to the standards for nursing home workers.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Blissenbach, so there's nothing in the bill that says that whatever they come up with has to be kind of affirmed by the legislature or discussed in the legislature?
Commissioner Blissenbach.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, no, that is they would be adopting rules similar to how an agency adopts rules through the rulemaking process.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're setting up a governor-appointed nine-person panel with rulemaking authority for regulating an industry that is on the verge of collapse. And we're saying that doesn't have to pass through the legislature. It's just this autonomous board that's advocating legislative responsibility. And we're gonna put even more layers of regulation on the nursing home industry. I think that is wrong-headed. I think this board gets $2 million. I think the total funding so far for nursing homes this session is, what, four or five, something like that? What are we doing here? Do we not care about the patients in the beds? The best thing we could do is pay the people more that work in the nursing homes so that they don't leave and go to McDonald's or work at Hobby Lobby. We are forgetting the value of the lives of the people that are in these nursing homes, and we're not going to have any place pretty soon to put our elderly folks. And that is very concerning. I sure hope that the Democrat majority before this session is out does something to help the folks in the nursing home. And I know, Representative Nelson, you would say that, well, these people are going to be trained better and they're not going to have injuries and all that. Well, the proof is in the pudding on that. But the best thing we can do is pay them more, not put them into what looks like a precursor to unionizing them. So, Madam Chair, I cannot support this bill for that very reason, and I'm going to encourage my colleagues to vote no as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion to House File 2755? Representative Agbaje and then Liebling. Or Liebling? Okay. Both had their hands up roughly at the same time. So Representative Liebling.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to respond really briefly to one thing. And I'm not on the Human Services Committee this year, so I don't know what is being done. But I suspect that Chair Knorr is quite up on it. But I do want to just say that there is a little misconception that's been floated. You know, when funding is in the, when we have funding that occurs by operation of law, as we do for nursing facilities, even if you don't put a dollar in a bill, it doesn't mean that they're not getting increased funding. I just really want to make that point. Nursing facilities are paid by quote-unquote value-based reimbursement. It may not be perfect, but they do get constant increasing funding in the base, in the forecast, without ever a dollar going in a bill. So anything that goes in a bill is on top of that. So that's all I wanted to say.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Again, I think we've been working hard on this provision that most people have been recently talking about, and apologies for being a couple minutes late. I will just say that the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board, I mean, I do think it's a step in the right direction of where labor should be going. It's something that really helps the workers ensure that they have a voice alongside the employer and alongside the regulators, because what we're doing there is we're ensuring that that group of people understands how to best spend the money, as Representative Liebling just noted, that that money is going to continue to come in. And we do want to make sure that they're being paid at the best possible rate, that they're being paid in a way that measures up with the experience that they have, and that we're hiring people who have the experience that we need to care for our loved ones who are in long-term care facilities. So I know that we're here mostly to talk about money, but you know, this piece I do think helps us ensure that that money is distributed in a way that supports the workers, supports the long-term care facility, supports the people who live there. So that way we're taking care of our most vulnerable in our communities, and we're also ensuring that the people who are most affected by this have a voice in how that money is distributed. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Liebling, for bringing the conversation about the value-based reimbursement. Just wanted to note that within the value-based reimbursement for the next 4 years, there is $853 million that is already included, forecasted, budgeted, which is going to go to the nursing homes. That's the fact, and people need to understand this is a value-based reimbursement that we adopted. And quite frankly, I think there are so many other challenges. We'll be talking about this, I am sure, during the conversation about the Human Services bill, budget bill discussion.
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, last word on your bill, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And again, this bill, basically the overarching theme of this bill is worker safety, making sure that people can go home from work at the end of the day in the same condition they came to work in the morning, but just a little bit tired or from working, putting in a good day's work.
Great. Thank you for your work. And with that, I will move that House File 2755 as amended be laid over. Thank you, Representative Nelson. So our next bill today is House File 2233, Representative Zhang, the Workforce Development Budget Bill. So welcome to the committee. As you get yourself set there, I will move that House File, 2233 be moved before the committee. And I will have you go over your bill, and then you have an amendment of the A15 amendment, and then we're going to lay over the bill, but we won't actually take action on the A15 amendment because we are going to move that the A15 amendment was drafted to the DE that will go on to the larger budget bill. So stick with me here. And so what we'll have you do is we'll do your bill, we'll take up the A15, we won't vote on it, we'll bring the A15 back later. So if you could just hang around in case there are questions at that point, but just especially for our GOP colleagues, make sure you kind of understand that we'll have discussion of the A15 But we won't actually take a vote on it at the moment. So with that long introduction to your bill, Representative John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill has two articles. The first article is on appropriations, and the second article is on workforce development. And so this bill was put together by listening to hundreds of community members from all corners of our state who came to share their stories about their struggles and how we can or have supported them through the years with our workforce funds. This bill will be a historical investment in our people and infrastructure for generations to come. It creates a new competitive grant. It creates new competitive grant programs at DEED that provide additional resources for job training and establishes the Office of New Americans that will lead the state's effort to effectively integrate workers into our workforce and entrepreneur system. This bill also will provide direct appropriations to many well-established community organizations like Summit Academy and CLUES that have a history of preparing Minnesotans for good jobs. It includes provisions from our Greater Minnesota members, Representatives Petersburg and Baker, that will help so many people. It also includes provisions from other members that will help those who come from historically disadvantaged communities, who do not have training and opportunities. And so this may have when it comes both skilled and unskilled laborers. So it will ensure to close the skills gap with heavy investment in building capacity for people to train others. This is how we can ensure that a rising tide lifts all ships in the harbor, and it's a realization of equity in practice. This bill also provides $21 million in new funding for the vocational rehab services and a new program to reimburse employers that accommodate disabilities. This might be one of the strongest bills for supporting Minnesota workers with disabilities that the House will be passing. At minimum, it recognizes that workers with disabilities is an important part of alleviating the worker shortage in our state, and this is how we operationalize equity in the workforce. The overwhelming majority of this amount goes to DEED, but will also contain a $7 million fund to the Department of Corrections for programs that provide instruction and employment opportunities for prisoners, which is a bill that Chair Knorr carried. This is a long overdue that we ensure all those who wish to participate and remain contributing to civilized society are given the opportunity and a chance of dignity and finding a meaningful job. This is a bill for Minnesotans. We're developing businesses, the workforce and community all at once, from continuing to support child care initiatives in Greater Minnesota to community energy transition grants. This bill helps fight the illusion of an us versus them mentality. The state is stronger and we're all stronger. This bill will help those close the rural-urban divide and will rise up all Minnesotans. The biggest ticket item in this omnibus bill is a $30 million appropriation each fiscal year 24-25 for a package of competitive grant programs to encourage workforce development targeted for communities of color and low-income communities. We're making meaningful investments in people and their social capital, and we're training youth into the workforce of tomorrow, and we're spearheading innovation and fostering of new leaders in business and labor force, and we're doing it in the greatest workforce development bill in Minnesota leaders have ever envisioned, and I can't be more proud to move this bill.
Thank you, Representative Jean. And would you, so I won't move the A-15, but would you describe the A-15 amendment for us, too, please?
The A-15 is the Minnesota Resiliency Program that was heard in our committee and was also championed by Representative Breyer and Chair Jimmy Becker-Fenn. There was an oversight on my part where he forgot to include the bill in here, and so all this is just to make sure that the bills is included in this budget.
Great. Thank you. Great. So we'll go to discussion on both the A-15 amendment and to the bill now. Any discussion to the bill or the amendment? Representative Scott.
I guess I'll go. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zhang, couple of questions here. I see there's $15 million appropriated for the Drive for Five initiative. Was that bill heard in your committee?
It was.
Representative Zhang.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill was heard on the our last hearing with Deed.
Representative Zhang, would you just go a little louder or closer to the microphone?
We heard the bill with Deed at our last hearing.
Representative Scott,
thank you. And there's $3 million to establish the new Office of New Americans. Was that ever heard in the Workforce Committee?
That, Madam Chair, that bill was heard in another committee, but it's through Deed, so it's within our budget, if I recall correctly.
Okay. Representative Scott.
Thank you. And the Energy Transition Advisory Committee, was that heard in your in the Workforce Committee?
Representative Zhang.
I believe so.
Representative Scott.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. According to my notes, it wasn't. I'm just wondering, I know that Energy Transition Advisory Committee has been in existence for a while, and this is just kind of re-upping it. Are you familiar with any of the work product that's come out of that that committee?
Representative Sean.
I'm sorry, can you ask the question again? I was looking at my CA. Sure.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Zhang. No, the Energy Transition Advisory Committee, that's been a committee that's been in existence. This portion of your bill is just re-upping it. It's otherwise, I think it was going to sunset. This is re-upping it and putting more financing behind it. And I'm just wondering if you have any information on the work product that has come out of that committee so far, kind of a justification for renewing it.
Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. No, I don't believe this was Representative Senator Muir's bill that we did here in committee.
Representative Scott.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'll save that for the floor and the person, Representative Senator Muir, on that, because I have some questions about that.
Madam Speaker.
The Office of New Americans, was that heard in your committee?
Representative Zhang.
Madam Speaker, no, again, this was a bill that was heard because it's, I believe State Gov was where the bill was heard. There was Representative Feist's bill, but it's also a program through Deed.
Representative Scott.
Thanks. I guess what I'm getting at, Madam Chair, is there are a number of provisions in this bill that weren't heard in your committee. They were heard in another committee, but they're in your bill. And so there's some others, the diversity and inclusion training for small employers, the public infrastructure project. There's just a number of bills within the omnibus that weren't heard in your committee, but yet they're showing up in your omnibus bill. So that gives me a little bit of concern. Madam Chair, over the past here, when we've been hearing the omnibus bills, we've had this separate amendment that talks about following the kind of sort of auditing the grant process and recipients of grants. And I don't see that amendment accompanying this bill. I don't know if that's a question for you. Or.
Yeah, that is. And so we'll actually put it on when we merge the bills. It'll go on as the last one that we'll cover. So we didn't do it for the labor and we didn't do it for this, but once we merge the bills, we will put that on, which will be the blanket for all.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah,
so thank it will you, Madam go on. Chair.
Thank or I mean, we will take it out.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to, respond to what Rep. Scott's talking about. Some of the bills that Rep. Scott referenced are the governor's recommendations. The governor's bill was late. We didn't get the bill until, I believe, the second week. The second deadline. So because of the advisor's office being really backed up, some of this, were not heard in committee because the bill was late, but we had Deed come to the Workforce Committee and then give us an overview and highlight of what's in the governor's recommendations.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Zhang. I just want to thank you for the large investments that you make in technology and STEM in your bill. Minnesota definitely, in conjunction with Representative Hassan's federal match on the CHIPS legislation is going to put us in a really good place. So thank you for that.
Further discussion to the bill? Representative
Pinto. Thanks, Chair. And it's my understanding that the provisions that were being asked about were in the bill when it left committee. So, I mean, the provisions were heard in the committee, right? I mean, it's not all that unusual for a chair to have provisions that are heard. Of course, I assume there's public testimony. And I mean, so the point is these provisions were, in fact, heard in the committee. They weren't heard before this budget bill was proposed by Representative Zhang, by Chair Zhang, but then they received testimony and there was a consideration and a vote. So they were actually all considered, at least as far as my understanding is. Thanks.
Final words, Madam Chair. I just wanted to respond to that. And I know that when we do omnibus bills, some stuff shows up that was never heard. But I'm talking about prior to being stuck in an omnibus bill. There's, I think I counted like 7 or 8 provisions that were just thrown in the omnibus bill before it left committee, but the bills didn't have individual hearings and go entirely through the process. And that's what we do here. I understand the governor's budget may have been late. That doesn't mean that the committee can't still hear the bills. We make exceptions and outside of deadlines to hear and vet bills properly. It's done quite frequently, and it's the right thing to do rather than waiting for it, you know, all just to be thrown in an omnibus bill where. On those days where the omnibus bills are heard, a lot of time public testimony is very limited in time, and so I just think we could do better in the process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do just want to note for the record that I certainly in my years here have seen chairs do that. Put things in at omnibus bill time that are not things that have been heard as standalone bills. I think one year in the environment bill under Chair Fabian, there were over 20 provisions that had not been seen as standalone bills. In this case, we actually have a reason why, and we're all being really upfront about why that's happening, and I just think that's important for the record.
Thank you. Further discussion to House File 2233, or the A15 amendment. Representative Fasano.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Chair Zhang for being intentional and working really hard to make sure that we reimagine our workforce. You know, our constituents have been coming to us telling us that there is a workforce crisis. We heard so many bills. I believe this was the one committee that there was 8-9 bills at every hearing. We heard from members from the urban court, suburban, greater Minnesota come to us and bring us workforce bills that are unique, that are exceptional, and creative on solutions on how to solve the workforce crisis that we're in. And I was, you know, very pleased to see Chair Zhang just work extremely hard to make sure that all these bills were included, and many of the bills were heard, and the governor's bill, while it was late, we still had an overview. Rep Baker wouldn't let us off the hook easily, so we had an overview of all the bills that he had questions on. But what's unique about the workforce and the economic development committee this year is that it used to be one committee, now that it's separated. So there were bills that were heard in my committee but ended up in Chair Zhang's omnibus bill. So those bills were heard. They had a full hearing, and we, you know, put them in his committee because the two committees, the lines overlap so much. So I believe what Rep. Scott was talking about was some of those bills that the energy bill was heard in my committee. It had a full hearing, and it was put in Chair Zhang's omnibus bill because the two committees overlap. So I want to thank for your leadership, Chair Zhang, and for being intentional about equity and for listening to Minnesotans across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, I will go to Representative Zhang for final word on your bill.
Well, I think Chair Hassan just took my words I was going to share with Representative Scott's concerns, and I assure you, Representative Scott, that although some of these bills may not have been heard in committee, they were very properly vetted. And I know that the same concerns you have for the governor's bill, I also had concerns too. That's why I asked them. I asked them persistently with Lead Baker, my Republican colleague who leads the Workforce Committee. We both were asking the governor's office, where is this deed bill? We would like to know what's in it. And I gave him a whole hour to, around, I believe it was about an hour for us, for my members in that committee to ask deed questions. And if you also have concerns, I'm more than happy to set up a meeting with you and deed and the governor's office to go over those concerns. That said, members, I know that you all have a lot of things going on today, so I just want to thank you all, and especially the community for coming in, and the workforce development members, all members who had an input in crafting this bill. This is not my bill. This is the workforce development bill that was crafted with both Republican and Democrat members in there. And so thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for all your work, Representative Zhang. And I will note just the way the committee structures are, there is a lot of overlap in deed and with the budgets being split. And so we're seeing some of that. And hence why we'll be combining to meet up with the structure in the Senate. And so I think some of that also has to do with some of the jurisdiction that's a little different than it has been in years past. And I think you and Chair Hassan have done a good job working together in partnership. So thank you for your work on this bill, Representative Zhang. So with that, I move that House File 2233 be laid over. Thank you. And next up is Senate File 3035, Representative Hassan. And this is the Economic Development Budget Bill. And Representative Hassan, you move that Senate File 3035 be placed in the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. Did I move the bill?
I just stated the motion for you as long as you are...
Yes.
The motion
would, okay. Yes, so moved, Madam Chair. It's too early. Yeah.
Late night last night.
Yeah.
So, and then what we'll do, Representative Hassan, is you will also move to delete everything after the enacting clause and insert the language from House File 3028, the first engrossment. Is that your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. And so why don't we take the vote on that to get the bill in the shape we need it to be, and then we will have you discuss it. So All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and we have the language adopted. So please describe your bill, Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the budget bill for the economic development. Like I said, Deed is divided into two committees, and I believe this is the first time, at least since I've been here, and there's so much overlap with the workforce and the economic development. I want to thank our nonpartisan staff for all the work that they did to make sure that not only do we understand the overlaps and jurisdictions, but also to craft a bill that we, Chair Zhang and I, are both happy with. I also want to thank my CA, Travis, who, while he has done this work for many years and worked with, Deed for many years, I don't think he has worked with two accounts, Deed divided into two accounts. So there was a lot of confusion around which bills are supposed to be or which accounts are supposed to be in what committee. But he worked really hard. And then my CLA, Elijah Henderson, who was also amazing, and our DFL researcher, Dave Sullivan, and then also our, Republican researcher, Lori Casino, who was also amazing. I also want to thank my members in that committee who, especially our lead Kasnick and my great vice chair, Hansen, who, and all the members who have created a safe space to have a really intentional conversation about equity. We started with our committee with grounding ourselves in doing two things. First, we did labor and land acknowledgement. And then secondly, we did an overview presentation from Dr. Bruce Corey that highlighted the disparities that exist in our state. So that grounded us in the reality that while, some of us, see Minnesota growing and having a really strong economy, that didn't mean that everybody was benefiting from that economy, that we were leaving communities behind. The last 3 years have been challenging for our state and even more challenging for our small businesses, with a pandemic that closed many of our doors and amplified our inequities in our systems and put a lot of stress on all of us because we were uncertain about what our future was going to be, followed by the tragic murder of George Floyd and the civil unrest that destroyed the cultural corridors in our main cities. I guess you can say our small businesses went through a lot. While the murder of George Floyd was a tragic incident and heartbreaking one, I believe it shaped our state and forced us to have really difficult conversations about systemic barriers, racism, and wealth inequities. And it's my hope that we will continue to use this tragedy as a turning point to build a state that works for all of us, an inclusive society for all Minnesotans. According to research, Minnesota has the third largest racial wealth gap in the country, the second biggest poverty rate gap in the nation at 291.78%, and the state's home ownership rate gap ranks fourth largest in the nation, while the median household income is the fifth largest. Some of the key factors driving this racial wealth gap include unequal access to capital, more barriers to pursuing higher education and opportunities, and underemployment, as well as generational gap that's far off for many people. Knowing all this, we had to be intentional about reducing disparities and creating opportunities, and we had to build a budget bill that was transformational and that speaks for the persisting systemic gaps that we had. This bill helps Minnesotans, with emphasis on small businesses, by investing in the infrastructure of small business, creating access to capital and wealth building. This year's budget bill has a special focus in intentional equity, creating tools to help people of color, women, veterans, LGBTQI, people with disabilities, and everyone from the underrepresented groups in the business community to become a business owner. The biggest ticket on this bill is the $500 million we are using to attract federal dollars. We're calling it Minnesota Forward Fund, and the governor and Deed and others expect Minnesota to receive $2 billion with this money. $300 million is to match at least federal funds in the CHIPS Act for microelectronic manufacturing facilities, and the $100 million is for the federal match for the Consolidated Appropriation Act passed in Congress in 2002 to establish a campus for biomanufacturing testing in Minnesota, and then $100 million to match for economic development projects. The reason why we're doing this is two things: to bring manufacturing back to Minnesota, and also to not rely on China for everything. We're also spending money to rebuild our cultural corridors on our two main cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul. As you remember, the civil unrest destroyed many of those, and we are replacing the Main Street Revitalization Program with a program called Empowering Enterprise that spends money on rebuilding those businesses that were impacted by the civil unrest. We're creating the Emerging Developers Account. As you guys know that in the developer world, if you don't have access to capital, relationships, and family wealth, it's really hard to break into that. We're funding the initiative foundations at $6 million, each initiative foundation, $1 million to supplement their revolving loan programs. And we are spending $5 million in case the World Fair comes to Minnesota, and that's a hope that it's going to come to Minnesota in 2027. We're spending money on the Canadian border relief. We had communities from the Grand Portage come to us and tell us that they used to have 400,000 crossings before COVID. And then with Canadian border being closed, open, that literally destroyed their small businesses in their small cities. And their crossings are now 100,000. So they really need help. So we're spending $4 million in that. And then I could go on and on how much money we're spending, but I want to make sure that I give people a chance to ask questions. This bill funds deed at its base funding, but we also increase funding for Explore Minnesota tourism. As you guys know, the tourism industry has really like taken a hit in the last 4 years, and we want to make sure that we can attract more people to come, you know, visit and live Minnesota. And with that, Madam Chair, I believe that I highlighted most of the things in this bill, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Discussion to the bill. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this really isn't a question as much as just a comment. I noticed that this bill does expand prevailing wage, and that's over the years has always been kind of a controversial issue. And I do think that sometime we should have another discussion about prevailing wage itself. I'm just, you know, whereas prevailing wage is a benefit to the employee, it's not necessarily to the employer. And I would just like to comment that, you know, what if the federal government would say all contracts that have federal money involved with it has to have a national prevailing wage cover to it? I think we would think that was unfair for us to have wages comparative to the West Coast and the East Coast, when we have different standard of living, we have different costs related to it. And the same is true throughout the state. We do have regional differences in lifestyle and cost of livings, and that makes a difference on what is an equitable and fair wage, not based upon statewide, but by upon the area that have. I know that's a controversial issue, and we're not going to deal with it today, but this, again, has an expansion in which it really is a benefit to the employee and not to the employer, and I think sometime we have to start figuring out how we can make that equitable for both the employer and employee. Just my own comment, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quick, I'm going to move this so I can see you. Why are we sitting here so I can see them? So when I'm looking through the fiscal notes on this, I see that a very large appropriation is in the first year of the biennium for a couple entities, one being deed, the other one being in the category of business and community development. It's substantially more than in the second year of the biennium, which sets up our tails. And I'm just wondering if you could expand on what are some of the things that they look to me like one-time funding because you don't carry it on into the second year of the biennium. Just can you talk briefly about that? So it's deed. It was $695 million in the first year and $125 million in the second year. And under the category of business and community development, it was $691 million with $120 million in the tail. So they're substantially different. But obviously, you're going to be using that money for some period of time. Maybe it's 4 years. Maybe it's longer. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at all that, and they might be all different. So if you could expound on that, please.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. O'Neill. So according to our chair of taxes, I remember hearing from Aisha that we have a large amount of money, but it's most of it is one-time funding. So this is why there is a large money of one-time funding, and I believe the tails are very small. But since this is about deed is in the room, so if we want to get Commissioner McKinnon to come up and just like comment on that would be great.
Representative Stein, and I will just say globally, you know, you can come up if you want, Commissioner, that, you know, within our budget targets, we obviously have our budget resolution that binds us for spending here in this biennium, but we also obviously sent the joint targets to the public, where we also have the spending in the tails, which, to Representative Hassan's point, we all know we had more money in the surplus in this biennium than we do next, so our chairs had to be very cognizant of, you know, setting up one-time appropriations, which I'm sure Representative Hassan did quite a bit of as we looked through the bill and could name a number of those things as we walk through, but those probably pop out in the spreadsheet where we can see where there's funding in this biennium that's not, and I think that's probably a theme for most of our chairs that had to deal with that this going through this process. So, but we can have maybe Commissioner McKinnon comment on that as well. So, Commissioner McKinnon, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Kevin McKinnon, I'm the temporary commissioner of deed. And in response to Representative O'Neill's question, yeah, the majority of the first-year funding, $500 million of it, is obviously the forward fund, one-time funding, obviously for economic development match. Moving forward, there are a number of other provisions that, yes, in the first year are funded at higher levels. Generally how it works is we normally have 2 years to spend most of that money. In some cases it will extend out beyond the 2 years as well.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. Yeah, so you know, I mean, I've looked at a few budget bills in my time. So I know the energy bill, for example, extended out nearly 10 years to be able to appropriate that, you know, use the money up, and it just sat there in a revenue account. So would you say that the $500 million then is going to be expended in 2 years for deed, or is there some extension past the 2 years?
Commissioner McKinnon.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, the way that the fund is set up and primarily for the CHIPS Act, as an example, semiconductor companies that will be applying to the federal government for funding. They should know relatively quickly whether their applications are accepted by the federal government, and as such then would come to us. And generally a building project for a semiconductor plant, as an example, can take 12 to 24 months for sure. And the way that this funding works is it's reimbursement based, so it may sit there beyond the 2 years, but it certainly would be encumbered before that in order to continue to pay it. Some of the other projects within the forward fund, the hope would be, yes, that the sooner we could spend those resources, the better. We want private investment. We obviously want to leverage the federal money. In some cases, it may take a little longer to develop property if that is one of the uses that comes with the fund that can leak out a few more years. But generally, I would expect definitely that this would be spent within four. That would be the hope. We don't want to sit on that cash any longer than we need to. We want to get that out there. We want to get private investment rolling along with leveraging the federal money.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hassan, how is it structured in the bill? I mean, I understand what Deed is saying. I appreciate that. I understand $500 million, they're trying to get it out as fast as they can. It'll be encumbered but not spent. But what does the language of the bill say as far as that money? Of large infusion of money up front, is it going into a special revenue account? Is it going to sit there for 2 years, 4 years, 10 years? Like, can you just give us the basic, I mean, we're in finance, the basic structure of how that finance is going to flow?
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe that the commissioner just tried to explain what we're doing. The idea is that we are going to attract federal dollars and bring manufacturing back to Minnesota. And you know, if we can get this money as fast as possible to companies who want to spend it, that would be fantastic. But it's my understanding that the language came from Deed and the governor. So, and that's exactly the way that it's in the bill.
Commissioner McKinnon.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, yes, there would be a special revenue fund for this.
Thank you.
However, the way our initial bill, the way that we have envisioned this is there could be a series of grants, loans for projects. Whether loans is actually one of the final negotiated items would be a question mark. That's what you would need that special revenue fund for, to recover that money and then put it back into projects.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't mean for this to go down a whole long rabbit trail, but I thought I was asking simple questions. Okay, so help me understand. So you are putting the $500 million into a special revenue account, which means that it stays there until it is spent. So it's not canceling back to the general fund. Some of it will be used for loans, so that's kind of a revolving pool of money. Can be, because you said you loan it out, you get it back in, it goes back into the special revenue account. Okay, so that's half of it, Madam Chair. I'm wondering about the other half, which is, unless the other $500 million also goes to D, but it's under the category of business and community development. If that's also under the purview of deed, I'm not sure, but
like
that's
Commissioner
a separate.
McKinnon knows the answer. So, Commissioner McKinnon.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I used to be the Executive Director of Business Community Development, so I know exactly what that is. That's a division within DEED that essentially holds the funding from the appropriation. What that funds is a series of programs between our Office of Business Finance, our Community Finance Office, our Small Business Office, and our Small Business Development Office and our Office of Business Development. So within there, you've got a series of programs and grants. Business finance, as an example, the Minnesota Investment Fund, the Job Creation Fund, Community Finance is your redevelopment account, small businesses are SBDCs and those types of things. There are also a variety of appropriations that come to DEED that this unit would also manage. So this is where the funds that flow through DEED to nonprofit organizations, as an example, for business technical assistance. That's where this money also resides.
Representative
O'Neill. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. This just brings up more questions. Okay. So the business and community development, it's again, it's another additional $500 million, one-time money, because it's not in the even second year, so it's not setting up a base. And it's going to job creation, and so all these different funds I've heard of many. I used to serve on the jobs committee, right. So with then Chair Garofalo, so I'm familiar with all that. But again, is this also going to a special revenue account, and so it will be there until it's expended, or is it going to cancel back to the general fund? And how much of that, the other question is, how much of that then goes to directly to nonprofits, if you happen to know that number?
Commissioner McKinnon.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, no, generally in appropriations to the Business Community Development Division are generally following the two-year provision. There are some programs within that budget that do have available until spent. Our Minnesota Job Skills Partnership, our Minnesota Investment Fund, et cetera. But generally, all of those funds are going to be for the biennium.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That does help. I'm just trying to bring some clarity, and I'm trying to stay as high level as I can, but... yeah, it's I don't serve on that committee anymore, so I don't have the background. I appreciate that. Okay, the last question I'll ask, and then I'll let some of my colleagues ask this. I really wasn't trying to go, you know, difficult questions. I don't know.
You're within the bounds of on a spreadsheet. I think that is, you don't have to apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so... I have a question for the author, if she would happen to know, and maybe if she doesn't, maybe your testifier might. So do you happen to know the split between Metro, the 7-county Metro and non-Metro, as far as money that is appropriated directly to directly for grants? For example, the Empowering Enterprise Program, it's specific money for the city of Minneapolis. It looks like it's $62 million. Another Empowering Enterprise Program for the city of St. Paul, which is $22 million. When I add up things that I could see real quickly in the spreadsheet as far as 7-county Metro, I came up with $304 million directly. And I'm wondering, do you happen to have a breakdown? Typically, so, you know, I used to serve on the jobs committee, so typically you do an equal split between Greater Minnesota and the 7-county Metro. Sometimes the Metro is defined differently, obviously, but do you happen to know the balance between the 7-county Metro and Greater Minnesota for in this bill, specifically designate for them?
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. O'Neill. I believe the Empowering Enterprise is specifically for rebuilding City of Minneapolis and City of St. Paul in the aftermath of George Floyd and the civil unrest for that money. But we're also spending money on Greater Minnesota, and I don't know if the commissioner wants to highlight what the DEEDS programs are, but I know that we're spending, you know, just a second. I got to look at my, I don't want to make up stuff. The Initiative Foundation's, the $6 million that we're funding for Initiative Foundations, that's for Greater Minnesota. The Canadian Border Relief is also Greater Minnesota. And I also believe the small business, the business partnership is also focused on Greater Minnesota. And I also know that MIRA, as well as NDC, which is Neighborhood Development, are also focused on Greater Minnesota. They both have like sites in Greater Minnesota that are focused on, you know, helping small businesses. So we were intentional about making sure that we fund Greater Minnesota as well as the metro. But the one big ticket is for rebuilding businesses that were impacted in Minneapolis and St. Paul. But I'll let the commissioner highlight some of the deed stuff that are funding Greater Minnesota.
Commissioner McKinnon, and I'd say there's a lot in here, just as a Greater Minnesota member too, the child care, there's things that probably even aren't explicitly listed as Greater Minnesota but have a larger impact in Greater Minnesota because of the need. Maybe child care is one, as many other areas too. But Commissioner McKinnon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative O'Neill. Madam Chair is correct. There are a variety of programs, obviously, that we administer that Greater Minnesota relies on. There are also a variety of programs like our public infrastructure program, some of our job training programs that are only for Greater Minnesota organizations. Generally, historically, from a DEEDS perspective, we've generally put more money into Greater Minnesota just based on various appropriations that happen through bonding bills and through through spending bills. We'd be happy to get you those breakdowns. We were just looking at them the other day. As it relates to Representative Hassan's bill, there are a variety of provisions there in which we have significant relationships with a lot of organizations through a variety of programs who are based in Greater Minnesota. We've got a great relationship, obviously, with the Initiative Foundations, the folks in Rochester, folks up on in the Northeast, the Entrepreneur Fund, as an example, who do a lot of business outreach and business technical assistance. And so there are a variety of programs like that as well that are within this bill that definitely will be utilized by businesses in Greater Minnesota.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for all of that. I really was just looking for kind of a bottom line number. I just happened to add up what I could see quickly, which was $304 million. Specifically to the seven county metro. You said you had just looked at a spreadsheet. Maybe you don't have that information. You could provide it to us later or something, because it's just something that, being on the jobs committee for many years, it's something that we took very seriously, that we tried to balance the attention that each portion of the state got. They have very different needs, and we recognize that. And, you know, I appreciate there are specific programs specifically for Greater Minnesota because they have specific needs. But I'm asking specifically in this bill, what is the balance? Top number line of, you know, it's 304. Maybe it's even more than that, just to the seven county metro. How much, $304 million, how much is it for Greater Minnesota in this bill? And maybe they don't have an answer today. I don't know, Madam Chair.
Commissioner McKinnon, we can certainly get back to you, because I think it's probably a deeper dive than what's just on the surface of the bill titles, but I could go to Representative Hassan or Commissioner McKinnon if you have a number you'd want to do now or get back or comments. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think we sat down and calculated here is for what we're spending on the metro, here is what we're spending for Greater Minnesota, because we do not want that divide. But we were intentional of making sure that every bill that came through our committee, that our members brought, that our, you know, that was a need for Minnesota businesses, that was highlighted. I think we're the only committee that can say we heard every bill that was sent to our committee, and we funded every bill. So, I mean, I don't know the number, the exact number, but I think that our staff can, you know, come up with a number for you and send it to you, because no one sat down and said that, are we spending dollar by dollar? How much are we spending on Greater Minnesota? How much are we spending in the metro? But we're intentional in making sure that we spend money from the Canadian border to South Minneapolis.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, it wasn't supposed to be a tough question. It's something that we talk about a lot. At least when I was on the Jobs Committee, we talked about it a lot, just this balance. Okay, so I only have one other question, and it probably pertains more to when we put the bills together, but I'll just put it out there so people can think about it. So the whole report back about nonprofits, Madam Chair, that we're going to add later, I have a question about. And you, and maybe I will address it to Chair Hassan, because you did mention it, that you heard every bill and you funded every bill. And my question really is, so after all of these funds go out, will there be then a follow-up committee hearing, whether it's next session, next biennium, to check to see how that money was used and kind of get a report back to the legislature? I think we do a bit of that, probably not nearly enough to hear back, especially when something's in the base. We just sort of fund it and just kind of go on, but we don't get a lot of reports back. Is that an intention of yours, is to hear back from the various, you said you funded every bill, so all those various organizations and nonprofits and whatever was funded, will they come back to your committee and report back to what they did with the money?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. O'Neill, when I said we funded every bill, I meant it in a much more positive way, because people came to us with a great need. Our small businesses were bleeding. They were hurting with COVID and, you know, civil unrest and everything that has happened in the last 3 years really impacted our businesses, whether it's Greater Minnesota or the metro. And it's my understanding that DEED has really extensive reporting, and we also plan to add another amendment to just make sure that if there's anything that DEED has missed, that we're going to cover it. But I would love to hear back from many of these projects that we're funding, because we're funding because we believe in these projects. We're funding it because we think it's there's a need for it. So it'll be an honor for me to just hear back from this, you know, communities, and just hear the work that was done under our leadership. But I want to give the commissioner to just highlight DEED's reporting.
Commissioner McKinnon.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, as part of the grants management process, we're required basically to close out grants. And when we do that, we certainly have reports on every grant that we do, and we roughly do 1,500 grants, particularly in the economic development area, over the last couple of years, primarily around the COVID circumstance, but generally we're between, you know, 500 and 1,500 grants, and every one of them, once they are closed, and have spent all the money, certainly we have the outcomes for that and would be happy to provide that. There are various programs. In fact, I'm looking at Dariel, maybe 35 or 40 that have reports. All of the individual appropriations would probably be more of what I was just saying, from when we close out the grants, that's where you could get the outcomes and how the money was used, etc.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to Representative Hassan and to the Commissioner for being here. Just to expound on Representative O'Neill's last question there. That was going to be one of my questions, was what kind of follow-up happens. Could you give us an insight on what metrics you look at in that reporting or before you can close out the grants?
Commissioner McKinnon.
Madam Chair and Representative Scott, when there's an appropriation, whether it's through an existing program or when it's an appropriation from the legislature, we have basically an application process. The grantee will tell us, if we're not that familiar with it, will tell us what their project is, what they will use the money for, how many people they will serve, how they'll spend the money, and then the outcomes. Generally from, I'll just use business technical assistance as an example, generally you're looking at the strength and capacity of the business. So were you able to leverage financing as a result of the technical assistance? So those are the types of things that we would be negotiating with many of the grantees in order to enter into a contract. Once we enter into a contract, then we manage to the budget that's created through the contract, and then continuously monitor our grantees. And the way that it works is it's always reimbursement based. So they have to spend the money, they have to do what they say they're going to do, and then we will reimburse them.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I'm assuming then, I mean, it's going to vary what the outcomes are and what is measured depending on who the grantee is. So what I'm observing here in this bill and with many others that are moving, so I'll just focus on this bill, I guess, because you're the deed commissioner. So there's an awful, there's a big expansion of grants in this bill, a very large expansion. So this is going to require a whole lot more oversight. And so does DEED have the staff to do that kind of work?
Commissioner McKinnon, and I think we'll do this, but I think this could be a relevant conversation for kind of every place, and he's in the hot seat right now. So we'll allow for a little bit of this, but I think, you know, a larger conversation around grant management could happen and probably does need to happen. And I don't think that all needs to happen within the context of this bill today, but being he is here, and if you wouldn't mind, Commissioner McKinnon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Scott. To your question, does DEED have the staff in order to implement this bill? Generally, from the economic development part of DEED, a lot of these provisions, yes, generally there are staff that would fund the programs to do a lot of the work. The additional programs that are coming on, I don't have the exact number related to economic development just off the top of my head, but we would need to add staff as a result of this through a number of different programs, but not to the extent of I think in economic development I think it's around 20 maybe staff that we would need. Some of those are more temporary as a result of the one-time funding. Some of them are funding existing staff as well, or FTEs that are already existing, and you program the administration that way. And so it's not a large expansion of it, but like you're hearing from your constituents, like you probably hear from others, we're trying to attract people. We're hiring right now for a variety of positions, and we will do our best, obviously, to implement what the legislature appropriates to DEED as quickly, as efficiently, and as accurately as possible.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So since this is the finance, the last stop as far as finances, Representative Hassan, have Have you built in that, you know, 20 employee need that they're going to have? Have you built that into this budget?
Yes. Representative Kassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Rep. Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott. I know that we're going to be combining this bill, and I'll just make some comments now, but sure, it's not necessary later, but, and I know we're going to adopt that, the one amendment again, yet still, but just to move things along. I feel like the combination of this bill, these bills, is there are some good provisions. There are some good provisions, and I think there are some aspects of this combined bill that will help the people of Minnesota, both the employees and the employers. I do have great concerns about some of the board that's being set up with the nursing homes. I feel like this doesn't go far enough in that it oversteps in regard to the nursing home situation. In other ways, I feel like it's harmful to businesses because it's putting more regulation in place, and it's broadly and it just seems to be an unbalanced bill. It seems to be focused on empowering unions versus a balance there between the employees and the employer. And I won't be supporting the bill today. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the question.
Thank you. Great. Seeing no further discussion, I will go to Representative Kassan for the final word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. And thank you, Rep. O'Neill, for your questions. Like the chair said, you didn't need to apologize. You are within your realm of just curiosity of what this bill does. This is a great bill. We heard from our constituencies all over the state of Minnesota and their needs in helping continue supporting small businesses, and this is the response to that request. So I hope you can support this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hassan, for all your work. And I was struck, I know we could comment on all the budget bills, but you know, when we talk about equity, we think about it kind of in, I think, a flat way, and I think your bill really highlights equity in kind of every way we can measure it as a state, and just really commend you for taking that into account from all the lenses, whether it be Greater Minnesota, whether it be whatever, and I think you did a great job really reflecting that. So thank you for that. And so now we'll have a series of motions and votes to merge the labor, workforce development, economic development budget bills. So first will the A23-0116 amendment. So this is the workforce development and economic development language. So Representative Hassan moves the delete everything amendment coded A23-0116, which will insert the combined language from the economic development and workforce budget bills into Senate file 3035. So that is the motion. Representative Hassan, is that your motion?
Yes, that's my motion, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
We have to amend that, so hold the line. So that is the motion. I will restate the motion, then I'll move the amendment. So Representative Hassan has moved the delete everything amendment coded A23-0116. There is an amendment to that, the A15 amendment. And that is the one that I had Representative Zhang described earlier. So Representative Hassan moves the A15 amendment to the DE, which is Representative Zhang's author's amendment. All those in favor of the A15 amendment to the DE, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the A15 amendment to the DE is adopted. So to the DE, now we have one more amendment to that. So Representative Hassan moves the A16 amendment to the DE, which is the grant management amendment. So Representative Hassan, do you move the A16 amendment to the DE?
That's my motion, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A16 amendment to the DE amendment is adopted. So now Representative Hassan renews her motion to adopt the A23-0116 amendment as amended. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails. And the A230116 amendment, as amended, has been adopted. Okay, so now we have one more thing to do here before we vote. So, Representative Hassan, would you move that the language in House File 2755, as amended, be incorporated into the Economic Development, Workforce Development, and Labor Budget Bill as separate articles?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bills have been merged. So now we have all of the bills merged, all of the amendments adopted. So we have our final motion of the day now. Representative Hassan renews her motion that Senate File 3035, as amended, be placed on the General Register. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and Senate File 3035, as amended, has been placed on the General Register. So that concludes our business for today. We are not meeting tomorrow, but we will be meeting Thursday and Friday at 9 a.m. And also likely, we will be meeting Monday and will likely be at 9 a.m. as well. So with that, we are adjourned.